Well, without limiting myself in terms of time, it's primarily one simon, or one sif, or one simon that's quickly involved. I'm going to read it first, and even though Rabbi Zinkin titled the shiur as How to Live a Life of a Ben Torah, I will address that as well, hopefully, in the course of the shiur. And the floor is going to be open completely to questions and comments. Although I have a lot to say, as usual, but the floor honestly is open to questions and comments. I'm beginning with the basic halacha that's mentioned here in Kuf Nun Vav. It's fascinating that in Shulchan Aruch, in our Chayim Kuf Nun Hei, which is the siman prior to the one I'm going to discuss, tells you, after davening in the morning, what should you do? Go to Beis Medrash. And you should be koveya, eis lilmo, the time to learn. And that time should be kavua. It should be fixed. Shelo yavirenu, do not, under any circumstances, you're not allowed to, in effect, the Mechaber says that one should not, under any circumstances, cancel that designated period of time. Even though the alternative is, I'm going to, I'll be making a windfall. That's irrelevant. And the Ramah says, even someone who does not know how to learn, let him go to the Beis Medrash. Schar halicha b'yado. O yikva lo mokam b'yilmon ma'at. B'meshi yodea. No, basically, everyone should be kovei to matara. That's what the both Mechaber and Ramah are suggesting over here. It does not indicate how much time. It could be several hours. It could be 2 hours. It could be 1 hour. It could be 5 minutes. But if it's 5 minutes, make sure that 5 minutes is fixed, embedded in concrete, and under no circumstances should you be mevater on those 5 minutes. The next siman, Kuf Nun Vav, is the one I'm going to discuss. The Mechaber says the following, Achar kach yelech la'asako. After that, thank you very much. After that, you should essentially go about and make your panasa. The chol Torah sheinu ha'malacha sofa b'teila. Torah that's not accompanied by work, at the end of the day, that's going to be batel. You'll not be able to learn the Gorer Sava. You'll, God forbid, be involved in all types of transgressions. Why? Because you'll be impoverished. You'll be destitute. You'll have no parnasa. Ki ha'oni yavirenu adas kono. Now, the chassidim say a joke. Since I sometimes think I'm a chassid shishir. So Chassidim say a joke. And it's a very interesting joke. Those who sing Zmiras of Shabbos here. Al Shtei Lechem Yitzus Mimin. Anyone remember that? Which mitzvah does that come from? Correct. Excellent. Al Shtei Lechem. There are two lechems for two types of bread. Tmimim. What are Tmimim? People who are? Tamim. Who are?
Complete.
Yitzu. B'tziyas HaPas, they will be broken. Those are the two lechems that break people. One is panasa. Lechem refers to panasa. And the other is a person's wife. Ki malachem asher oichal. So that's what Chassidim say. There are two things that can break a person. A wife, make sure you marry the right wife. I'm sure you're aware of that. And number two, you have to have panasa. Okay, that was just an aside. Since I said I'm the Chassidish Yeshiva.
Are the two names?
Panasa. Lechem refers to Panasa. It's a cute little joke. Al Shtei Lechem, for these two lechemim, even Tmimim, people who are whole, complete, are broken. Can easily be broken. And that, you understand, is true. If you don't have Panasa, Chas V'Shalom, that can destroy a person, God forbid. And number two, a person whose marriage is not a good marriage, that can be very destructive in a person's life. It's a play on the Shtei Lechem, which of course refers to Lechem Mishne, Yitzur Tmimim. It was just a comment because of what I saw here in the Mechaber. God forbid a person is impoverished. A person, God forbid, can be led to disastrous consequences. Let me just finish this Mechaber. Lo yasim malachto ikar, ela arai. What should be the primary focus of your life? Not the parnasa, but rather the Torah Sakeva. And that's interpreted in many different ways. For example, the Rambam has a very famous interpretation. You're probably familiar with it. The Rambam Hilchos Talmud Torah tells you, how do you divide your day? So what did the Rambam say? 9 hours you should devote to Talmud Torah, and 3 hours to work. What do you say to that?
How can you make a living for 3 hours a day?
It's possible that someone can make a living in 3 hours and someone can make a living, shall we say, 12 hours. Different people have different situations that you're masking to. So the Rambam speaks about that kind of ratio, but the point of the Rambam is simply, I don't think, not to put in concrete the number of hours that I spend learning and the number of hours I spend working, but rather the intent of the Rambam is that what should be the focus of your life? Torah. And that's what the Mechaber says also. Irrespective of the number of hours, the ratio that's involved. And the Rambam and the Mechaber both say, v'zeh v'zeh, yisgai v'yodoh. And if a person is, Baruch Hashem, successful and has a panasa, and then the person will be able to learn Torah without worry, and both of them you'll be able to, in effect, shall we say, combine both. And of course the Mechaber goes on to say, v'yisav yitin be'emunah, one should do so. One's business should be one which is based on yashrus. It should be obviously honest, should not be deceitful, don't engage in any kind of devas das, any kind of duplicity. One has to be honest to the extent that one possibly can. And this is, by the way, the Mechaber that now I'm going to talk about. Did you want to say something?
Does the halacha of learning Rashi Davening apply to us after breakfast? We're going to sit there anyway. Should we learn Rashi Davening?
The Minhag Yeshivas, if you probably know, is that people learn halacha right after Davening. I would say it's a minhag in many yeshivas, both Sephardic and Ashkenazi yeshivas, that's what I've seen. In Parat Yosef, they have a Seder Halacha right after Davening. And in the Panovich, they have a Seder Halacha right after Davening. So why should Torah Shragan be different than Panovich and Parat Yosef? Even though it has Chassidish aspects to it. Anyway, okay. So I'm going to begin by referring to a famous issue, and you're familiar with this issue, and that is a stira, a very well-known stira, that is asked already by many mefarshim. The Gemara says in Kedushin, the Gemara has the following comment. First, the Gemara comments already that a father is obligated to teach his son a number of things, and one of the things the father is obligated to teach his son is umnis. What does umnis refer to?
A trade,
a profession. There's a machlokes in the Gemara here regarding that particular matter, but that's a clear statement. The Gemara actually derives from Sukkim, Rei Chaim Leisha Shehafta. The Gemara says, whoever does not teach his son a trade, Ke'ilu Melamdo Listus, as if you're teaching him to be a brigand, to be a thief, to be someone who's involved in brigandry and what have you. And that is found in a number of Mamor Chazal. I'm not going to go through all the Mamor Chazal. Then there's another famous Gemara in Kedushin Daf Pei Beis, that the Gemara says, the famous comment of Rav Noroi, the only thing I teach my son is Torah. Nothing else. No profession, no craft, no trade, no university. You hear the contradiction? So there are many different approaches to resolve this contradiction. And just to share with you, there are at least five or six that I'm familiar with, there probably are more resolutions to this. One resolution is actually found right here in the Mishnah Berurah in Bi Halacha. That's why I'm referring you to the Mishnah Berurah in Kuf Nuzvav. One of the most famous comments of the Bi Halacha, he writes the following. Kasu Asvarim, the Svarim write, Shezeu Nema L'Chlal Ha'olam, that this statement that is made by the Mechaber over here, that Torah has to be accompanied by melacha, by umnus, by a trade, by a craft, by a profession, otherwise it will lead to transgression. That is for whom? That is for the population as a whole. Shein kulam yicholim listos lalos madrega ramazo rios iskam rak patorah levat. Most people don't have the capacity, the ability just to sit and learn Torah 24/7. Aval anoshim yechidim, Mr. Brewer says, there are individuals, correct? There are individuals who have the capacity to do so. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah says, that for Rov HaOlam, what do most of the people have to do? They have to acquire a trade. But the Yechidim have the capacity to sit and learn 24/7 and devote themselves fully to the study of Torah. The Mishnah Berurah right away tells you that the source for this is the famous argument between who and whom? Hashem and Yechai and Rabbi Shirabi. The Gemara in Brachas, and that's very well known. The Gemara presents two positions based on Sukkim that the Gemara quotes, that the Gemara cites. One position is the position of Hashem and Yechai, that he essentially contends that Efshar Adam Chavish B'Shas Chavisha, V'Zorah B'Shas Zviyah, V'Kotze B'Shas Tzira, Torah Matei Olah, person, let's say, during the time of Chazal, they were farmers, they were involved in agronomy and agriculture, and a person is plowing during the season of plowing, a person is sowing during the sowing season, a person is harvesting during the harvesting season. If you're involved in all these kinds of agricultural works and the like, when do you have time to learn Torah? So therefore, Hashem Yechai suggests, what should you do? What's his position? Just sit and learn. One should devote oneself to learning 24/7. Rabbi Shmuel says, no. And the Acharetz has many translations, Kayadua, but in that context, the translation is, the Acharetz refers to going to work. No, you have to go to work. Then the Gemara has the following statement quoted by the Mishnah Berurah. The Gemara says, Harbi also, Krav Shimon Yechai, many people attempted to follow his, shall we say, particular approach, namely just learn 24/7, below also be Yadam. And the Mishnah Berurah is Medayik. Harbi! Many tried to do like Rav Shimon Yechai, and they didn't succeed. So what does one see from there, says the Mishnah Berurah? That clearly, for Rov HaOlam, for most of the population, which Gemara should they follow? The Gemara Kedushin that says that one should have a profession, one should have a craft, one should have a trade, one should do whatever one has to do in order to be able to have Parnasa. However, for a mute, there's apparently a small segment, one doesn't have to finish his point, a small segment, that segment, shall we say, should devote themselves to the study of Torah day and night. And that's how we resolve the contradiction between the two Gemaras, the Gemara Kedushin on Pei Beis, and the Gemara on Chavtes in Kedushin. And the Mishnah Berurah further brings a raya from a famous Rambam. A Rambam that is, I think, very cryptic. The Rambam in Perek Gimel, Shmita V'Yovel, Halacha Gimel, he speaks about not only Sheva Levi are devoted to Hashem, but anyone, Mikol Boy Olam, whatever the source of that Rambam is, which is the subject of a lot of discussion, that any person is able to become Kodesh Kadoshim. The Rambam says, and Hashem will be Chelko V'Nachaloso. Quotes a pasuk in Tehillim. So the Mishnah Berurah says that, especially if you have people who are willing to support you, namely the Yisachar Zvulun kind of combination, this week's Pasha. So therefore the Mishnah Berurah now comes to the Maskana, that how do we resolve the contradiction between these two Gemaras? That for Rov HaOlam, for most of the world, what should they be doing? Learning Torah together with a profession. But even those individuals, what is the Iker and what is Tofel? Very clear in the Mishnah Berurah and very clear in the Mechaber. The Iker is Torah. What is Tofel, what is secondary? A profession. However, there is a minority of people that they are, on the contrary, they are devoted to the study of Torah 24/7. They fit the Rambam and Shmita V'Yovel. They fit the miut that the Gemara speaks about in Brachas. They are obviously under the aegis of Rav Noroi, Sheinu Melamed B'nei El Torah, and that's one resolution to this matter. This is the famous resolution found in Mishnah Berurah, found in Briskarov, in his Perush Al Torah, found elsewhere. It actually preceded the Mishnah Berurah, it preceded the Briskarov. I think it's come out found in Rishonim, but that's not for now. Yes?
For those minority of people who were able to learn all day, is it like a sign of haughtiness to say, like, I'm able to learn all day and I don't need a profession? Like, who?
Clearly, haughtiness and Torah are antithetical one to the other.
Right, but somebody could just sit down and be like, I don't need a trade because I'm able to do it.
But we're talking about someone who has the wherewithal to do it, as someone is supporting him, either his parents, his in-laws, Klal Yisrael, Yisachar Zvulun type of relationship, that's what we're referring to. If someone has the ratzon, because you certainly need that, and if someone has the capacity, and if someone, shall we say, is driven, because you have to be driven in order to do that. And at the same time, there are many other aspects that I would like to talk about, perhaps I hope I'll get to them. The answer is yes, but obviously it should not be accompanied by haughtiness, chas v'shalom. Haughtiness and Torah are literally a steer of a negel bay. The Gdolei Yisrael that all of you know are literally there, I would say the epicenter of their personalities are pure modesty, pure anova. The very opposite of haughtiness and arrogance and what have you. I'm talking about across the board. Sfaradim v'Ashkenazim, no question about it. Which one do you know? Arab Maran Rav Avadya? You know him well?
Yeah.
You know him well?
Close friend.
I see. That was said tongue in cheek, I guess. Okay. Trust me, Rav Avadya is the furthest thing from gaiva imaginable. Doesn't have as he has one type of gaiva that he does have, and that's called Azaz Dikdusha, that he has. Baruch Hashem, no short measure of that. I would say in plenty he has, but Azaz Dikdusha is doing things L'shem Shamayim and trying to, shall we say, move Klal Yisrael forward. And that's generally speaking, many Gedolei Yisrael operate like that. But you hear the resolution of the issue? Of the contradiction? Yeah, that's
it. It seems to me that in the person who's like, you know, he learns and he works, the Torah comes first. That's, there's no controversy there. But when it comes to like the Yisachar's Moon kind of thing, where it is the ideal that you should learn all day and if you can't do that, then you work? Or is that, or is there no distinction? You know, either you have a proclivity to learning or you have a proclivity to working. What's the idea?
I would say both are correct, both statements that you made. Correct. One, clearly it depends on proclivity, no doubt about it. It's not just proclivity, it's also capacity, it's also desire. Rav Soloveitchik used to use the following expression, which is the Yiddish expression, pardon my, you'll see how much Yiddish there is here. That is, aviler is best of the akener. Someone who wants is better than someone who can. Often, someone who wants and someone has a very strong desire to learn, and they actually literally expend enormous amounts of energy and they're willing to put in the time, you'd be surprised at what these people can rise to. There's a very famous story because of Rabbi Rablaski Shlita, I'm zochet to that story, in the Sefer Chayyola, which actually I acquired from him. The truth is I saw it before, but I'm not into that genre of Sforim so much, I'll be honest. But I have to read it. It's a Sefer when you, I got it in one sitting. That's what I generally do. So I saw, he quotes from the Tzam Sefer the following story. A story of apparently someone learning in the yeshiva who was, shall we say, not intellectually the most acute person in the world, but he had this incredible desire, incredible cheshek to become a Talmud Chacham, to become a Ben Torah. But everything he did essentially was more or less stymied by his intellectual capacity that was, I don't want to say deficient, not something to be desired. Not everyone's an idiot, obviously. There are average people, there are below average people, there are all kinds of people. But however, he was tenacious and stubborn and dogged and determined that Samsova saw. He decided to go ahead and set up chabrusas with him. And this fellow, after apparently an extended period of time, became a rav and apparently an outstanding Talmud Chacham. So it's possible because we happen to subscribe to something called Siyat Mishmaya. We believe in that. The Gemara says it all over Shas. The Gemara says, Habol Etayer, Misayin Osam. Someone who wants to do the right thing and is moving in the right direction, Hashem is going to give him Siyata Dishmaya. We believe that fervently and passionately. So proclivity is certainly a big factor, but you are 100% correct in your first statement as well. I think both statements are correct. I think both. It's hard to say, shall we say, it means people often ask, and that's what you're asking really, is the ideal just to sit and learn all day, 24/7? So the answer is, in one respect, for sure it is. No question about it. It's a pasuk. It's a pasuk Sevi Yoshua. And we know that Lasid Lavo, that's how the Chazal described in many different places, what exactly is going to be? Tzadikim Yoshvim, Vatroseim, Roshayim, Venenim, Ziv Hashchina. What are they going to be doing? Eating papagayas over there? I don't think so. My understanding is, my understanding is they are going to be essentially, the way the Rambam describes and other Rishonim describe it, they will be involved in intellectual relish, intellectual papagayos, which is the study of Torah. That is the ideal, shall we say, optimal world of the Talmud Chacham. And so ideally, all of us should be involved in the study of Torah day and night, but because this Harabach Be'er writes in his essay, in Kedusha, Baruch Be'er says that should be the ideal, but since we have obligations, namely making parnasa, obligations to relax, we have to play golf, obligations to, shall we say, chill out. So because of that, we have a tour. We have actually an exemption during those periods, during that point in time, but both in Ekroni, fundamentally, we should be involved in the study of Torah. That's the ideal. Tanakh, I can show it to you, many, many psukim Tanakh, I just don't have time right now, but if you remind me, I'll be glad to show it to you. And that is, but this is one resolution to the so-called contradiction. I want to mention two or three others. I mentioned in the Gemara, which I'm going to interpret in a moment, famous Gemara, because where's Jeremy, is he here? Okay, anyway, so he made a siyum atainis, so he'd be the one to help us over there. Go ahead, yes.
Is the Gemara Menachos on the Rosh Yeshiva's list?
Yes, it is. It's a tzadik test. Of course, that Dr. Murray is obviously fundamental. It's like elopes to this whole discussion. I don't know if I'm going to get to it. But since Shmuel mentioned, the Gemara says in Menachos, Shal ben Deim Esachachom, ben Deim Esachachom, Ma'u Ani, Shalamadati Kol HaTorah Kula. I already finished the entire Torah. Can I learn Chochma Yavanis? I'm not discussing that what Chochma Yavanis is. That needs a treatise. But whatever Chochma Yavanis is, he asked, I learned already Kol HaTorah Kula. Can I study something else? Let's say Greek philosophy, if you interpret it like that. I don't think that's what it means. But anyway, can I do something else? So he told him, no. But rather, you want to do it? Do it. When? B'shar she'en al yom ulo layla. She'nev v'agis v'yom v'layla. He's referring to that Gemara. But the Gemara there has a machlokes, a very famous machlokes Tanoim, that needs further discussion. I hope I'll get to that in a little while. I'm not sure. What? That's correct. The same issue Rishonim pointed out already, both in Brachas and Menachas. I'm just saying to you that there's a contradiction here. I want to mention one or two other resolutions of this contradiction between the two Gemaras that I began with. I'll mention another clear statement in the Bi'ah Alocha, in Sivin Shin Vav. Siv Vav, the Mishnah Berurah says, there's a machlokes Tanoim, these two Gemaras, one that says you have to teach your child the craft, the other one, Rav Noroi, that says, I'm only teaching my child Torah, says the Mishnah Berurah, Siman Shin Vav, Siv Vav, the Bi'ah Alocha. How do we paskin? Not like Rav Noroi. Clear Mishnah Berurah. Very different than the Bi'ah Alocha over here. Clear. We paskin like the Brayso of Chavtes, I must teach my child, my son, a craft, a profession. That's the second quote-unquote resolution between these two contradicted Gemaras. I will now give you one or two others. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, also famous tshuva. He writes in the tshuva, Rav Noroi is talking about when a child is young. When a child is young, what should you do? What should the child do? Devote himself to the study of Torah. When a child becomes older, then at that point, the mechuyav to teach him on this. He's mechalik between kotn and gadol. Chidush shein kamo. I heard this from Avisa Malpas Hatzal. It was a Talmud Muvag of Rav Moshe Feinstein. That's what he distinguished between these two Gemaras. And he's not the only one who says it. I saw it also in the Netziv, in a Perish on the Haggadah called Imre Shefer. Also has a similar kind of distinction between these two Gemaras. Number four, since I'm already beginning to, shall we say, cite the distinctions, there's a famous Sam Sefer. I think a very difficult Sam Sefer. The Sam Sefer says, Rav Noroi, you know what he's talking about? When do I teach my child Torah only? In Chutzlaretz, in Teaneck, New Jersey, in Chicago, in Muncie, in, shall we say, Edison, in Brooklyn, even in Flatbush, in Connecticut, but in Eretz Yisrael, there's a zechiyah to teach an umnis. Why? Because in the midst of Yishev Eretz Yisrael. What umnis am I talking about, says the Tzam Sofer? What other umnis is there but agriculture? As a matter of fact, according to the Tzam Sofer, the midst of Yishev Eretz Yisrael may only be fulfilled by involvement in some agricultural pursuit. V'yasavta d'ganecha. What do you say to that? Offer ani mitachas kapos vaglo shalak sam sefer. Chidush godol she'en kamo. I'll just give you one other answer, since I'm at it. Well, Chana Basimin, Zechet Tzadik Bekodosh Debracha, he has in the Kevitz Ma'amorim, I don't know if you're familiar with that selection of essays. Rav Chana Basman was one of the greatest of the Gdolei Rosh Yeshiva of the last generation. Someone that you should be familiar with. So for those who need familiarity, you should speak to Moshe Nechemi Reichman Shlita, and I'm sure he'll give you some introduction to Rav Chana Basman. He was a tremendous tzaddik. He was a Talmud of two great Gdolei Olam, a Talmud of Chatz Chaim, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, and a Talmud of Chaim Briska, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. A Talmud of these two unbelievable titans. So he has a collection of essays called Kovitz Ma'amar, very fascinating essays, rather sharp in nature, to say the least. And it's good to read them. Have they translated them to English? I don't know. Have they? Anyone know? So he writes over there that there's a distinction between two types of children. There's, shall we say, a ben, and there's a ben. There's one child who is sharp, intellectually agile, with incredible intellectual reflexes. So to that child, obviously, there's no question. Which Gemara applies to him? Rav Noroi. Mashenkein, a regular, run-of-the-mill kind of son. To him, you have to teach a craft. The truth is, the Bnei Yeshua already says this teretz. But Al-Khan actually, I think he quotes the Makneh, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not into Achronim. You have to ask Rabbi Reichman Shlita. He's more into that than I am. Anyway, I've given you a number of, shall we say, just overall distinctions between these two Gemaras. And I began with this Gemara by way of an introduction, because this Gemara really, I think these two Gemaras are very telling regarding the topic at hand. I want to just begin the discussion with the Gemara in Tainis, a famous Gemara, Daf Aleph. I want to tell the story, and you tell me what the challenge of this Gemara is. And I will be honest with you, this Gemara has bothered me for many, many years. I'll just tell over the story quickly. The Gemara Daf Aleph tells the following story. Ilfis Rav Yochanan Habegarsi Bar Isa. There were two great Talmidei Chacham, Ilfis. Have we encountered Ilfis in our journeys through Shas? The answer is yes, a number of times. But he's primarily known for this Gemara for some reason. Anyway, I think it's also found in Ksubis, a similar Maisa. Anyway, Ilfis Rav Yochanan were learning Torah. Dechikalu mil Satuba. They were having difficulties with Parnasa. They needed Parnasa. Amri, they said, Nekum v'nezel v'nevet iska. Let's go into business. Let's find a Parnasa. Unikayim benafshim. We'll be able to unikayim a pasuk. Efes. Kiloyiyah b'chaev yom. Torah says in Dvarim. Efes kiloyiyah b'chaev yom. Of course, that's an idyllic kind of situation. There won't be any anim in the world. Amri Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan decided, no, I'm not going. Why? There's another pasuk. I'll be mekayim that pasuk. I'm not going to the interpretation right now of the Gemara, but he decided to go back to learning. Ilfis lo hadar. Ilfis did not return to learning. The Gemara says, Adasa Ilfis. So Ilfis went on his merry way, created a business for himself, and then meanwhile, in the course of that period of time, Rabbi Yochanan became a Rosh Hashiva, and the practice is, someone who's a Rosh Hashiva, what are you supposed to do? So Rashi says right there, famous Rashi in Tainis. Someone's a Rosh Hashiva, says Rashi, they made him wealthy. Rosh Hashiva has to be a wealthy person. Hint, hint. Anyway, joking. So the Gemara says, they said to him, the way I want to interpret the Gemara is that, obviously, they indicated to Ilfis, look what you lost. Had you remained, you might have become Rosh Hashiva. Now, Rabbi Yochanan became Rosh Hashiva. You went into business. What did Ilfis do? He was so, shall we say, thunderstruck by this comment. Also, Ozal Tola Nafshe Baskar Yedisfinta. He went up and hung himself on top of the mast, M-A-S-T, of a ship. You know the mast? The highest point. He hung himself up there. Omar! And he made the following statement. Whoever asked me on any brisa of Rabbi Chiya Raboshia, they were the authors of brises. But of Shitale, and I can't answer it. Me masnita from a Mishnah. Nafilma me askaria the spinta of a tavana. I'm going to jump off the mast and drown myself. You hear this, Gemara? What do you say? Something is fishy in the state of Denmark.
Rosh Hashiva.
Yes.
I guess he's gone off the deep end.
Yosef, that's the best one I've heard from you in a long time. Okay.
Yes, he really amassed a lot of wealth.
1 second. We're going from the sublime to the ridiculous. Anyway, according to the Babli, which is the story I just told you here in Tainis, how can you imagine a gom, a chacham like Ilfis, going up to the master of the Spina and having this vikuach and talmidim of the yeshiva and essentially threatening to do what? To commit suicide. Now, you might argue maybe he was so certain of his, shall we say, greatness in learning. He was such a charif and such a baki. He was certain that no one could possibly stump him. He'd be able to resolve all issues, all questions. What is the pshat in this Gemara? This Gemara has bothered me every time I learn Tainis. Chavalef, I'm bothered by this Gemara. I started learning Tainis many, many years ago. So I grew up in a shul with Rabbi Chil Michal Chalak, Zechatzal Midracha. My father was showing me to take me to daven there because he used to give drushes on Shabbos in the afternoon. I was 5 years old, Rabbi Reichman. 5 years old, I didn't have a clue what the man was talking about, but my father wanted me to be 1,000 people who would come to hear him. That's the father of Zul Chalak, the son of Rabbi Misha Chalak, Rabbi Chil Michal. He's a Machaber of Rabbi Zul Chalak, put out his father's farm called Chof Yamin, which is on many, many Mesechtes in Shas. I tell you the truth, I never looked at them. That's Hatoya and Maskar Ayo. Maybe Rabbi Eichmann, you perhaps looked here and there.
He has a sefer, 250 pages, on Daf Beis and Mesechtes Makis.
What's there to say? Anyway, so he was a going out there, as you can see from what Rabbi Eichmann mentioned. Anyway, so he's a darshan on Shabbos afternoon. 1,000 people came to hear. By the way, he spoke 3 languages. Obviously Hebrew, he was Yerushalmi. Yiddish, of course he spoke fluently. And in the course of years, he developed a chush for speaking English as well. This is amazing. I can't say his English was, certainly it was not the English of Aras Soloveitchik, not the King's English, nowhere near that, but he was an unbelievable giant. And I was very dispoiled from him. He also told many stories about his father, Abaka Moshe Chalam. That I was lucky to hear. And I think in my neighborhood there's a wonderful Rav, his name is Rav Spector, he's a full Shlema. So this Rav Spector learned in Merkaz Rav, over here in Yerushalayim. Merkaz Rav, Rav Eliezer, Rav Meir. Okay, there are people who in the yeshiva learn in Merkaz Rav. And so they were zochet to a practice that's coming at Shri Yishol Pesach, Shira Sayam. Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalav was very into Shira Sayam. They were on the seventh night of Pesach, when we crossed the Yam, Kriyas Yamsuf, they had this beautiful song that they sing for hours and hours and hours. So the Rav in my neighborhood, who came to my neighborhood many years ago, he's the Merkaz of Avnik, and he wanted to invite the neighborhood, and he now has Shira Sayam every Shri Yishol Pesach. I'm also invited, and they sing that niggin, which is actually a recently wrote a biography of Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalav called Shira Sayam. And actually I read the biography also in one night. And so it's focused on this really remarkable personality, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Chalav. He was really a tzaddik, a malach Hashem spoken to, and a great goyim. He had a connection to all the Gedolei Yerushalayim, literally for all the different colorations. And anyway, so this Rav thought that I was not aware of the Shira Sayam, and if he wanted to teach me, I grew up on the Shira Sayam. I just didn't let him know I did. But anyway, that's just the Derech Agav. So Rabbi Chil Mech Chalav said the Pshat in the Gemara is the following. He's going to interpret this Gemara, and you tell me what you say. You know what the Sfina represents? The ship represents, of course, this is now homiletics, if you will. Drush, you know what Drush means? Not the simple Pshat in the Gemara. The Sfina represents essentially business opportunities, because by definition, Sfina, these are ships that ply the seas. Those who are familiar with Friday night, all of us sing, I imagine, Eishes Chayim Mehimsa. Here we have a woman who's a businesswoman, correct? Rather sharp, you know what I'm referring to? Her ships ply the seas. Do you sing Eishes Chayim? Do you know exactly what's there in Eishes Chayim? Okay, maybe take a look at it one day. And so we have a woman who's a very, very, I would say, even sensational in her business acumen. And so that's what the Sfina represents. And the Torin, the mast, if you will, this Gemara, that Ilfis reached the highest levels of success in business. That's what he said of Chil Michal. He was incredibly successful as an entrepreneur, as a businessman, and yet he wanted to show the Talmidim of the Yeshiva that he never abandoned Torah for a second. He was still holding, as they say. He was still immersed, he was still Shakua, Bliman HaTorah, and in terms of his knowledge of Torah, his Iyud, his Vakiyas, completely on par with everybody else. So he wanted them to test him, to make sure that he did not falter from his learning. Because otherwise, what would he do? He would jump. What does that mean, he would jump? He would jump back into the Yama Talmud. That's how Rabbi Chil Michal interpreted the Gemara. He would jump back into the Yama Talmud. You know, the Zohar writes, Mr. Arsadim here, Shadim Torim, that the Tanaim are called Nune Yama. What are they called? Fish who swim in the sea. Trust me, Rabbi Avadya, Shalita, swims in the sea. He's one of the fish in the sea. He's obviously a whale, not just a small fish. But anyway, Nune Yama. That's why people have a minhag. Ergum Kippur, to eat fish, placed in Tzubis, mentioned by the Poskim. Lomashaneh. Whatever the case is, that so he was going to go back into the Yama Talmud. Thus, he would completely and totally divest himself of all his business pursuits and return to Limud HaKadosh, Tarasa Luso. And the Diuk that Rabbi Chil Michel made from Rashi, both in Tainis and also in Ksubas, that some attest of Yigdu Lashon and Rashi, Ilfis said, Afal Bisha Alakti Bishora, or Shachakti Talmudi. Even though I went into business, I didn't forget my learning. That obviously is quite a feat. For someone to go into business and not forget his learning, it's not a simple thing to do, as you can imagine. Anyway, I mentioned this story because I always am fond of this explanation of the Gemara. I don't have any other explanation, other than Rahman al-Litzan, to have many kashis, and I prefer this kind of explanation. I think it's very unique. I think it's a very original kind of insight into the Gemara. Okay, now that we have introduced the topic, so now we will begin to really explore the matter a bit further. I want to just first share with you a number of things. And that is, I think it's fairly obvious, I don't think I'm saying any tradition, but I will, and you can ask questions, feel free. I decided to go ahead and share with you, just, I went looking actually. There's a great Gadol whose name was Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger. Anyone ever heard of him? Aruch Lanei, anybody ever heard of?
Yeah.
A very famous sefer. Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger attended university. He went to university. I think he went to university in Würzburg, if I'm not mistaken. He was actually a Talmud of the son of the Shakazari. He learned by the son of the Shakazari. He went to university, and during, I think, his third year, a riot that broke out in Germany, and he never completed his program of study. However, he pursued a formal program of study at a secular university, Yaakov Ettlinger. That was then in Germany. And he excelled. And I want to read to you two things, actually. One, which is really amazing to me, beside the fact that he spoke several languages fluently, he felt it was necessary in order to be able to be successful as a rabbi. He was involved in all kinds of disputes, involved with the government. I think at that time he was Raven Altona, which was actually under the aegis of the Kingdom of Denmark, if I'm not mistaken. And so he clearly needed languages in order to be able to interact on behalf of the Jewish community. In 1839, he established a day school in Altona and had the following curriculum. 9 to 13 hours a week were devoted to Jewish studies. Boys and girls were separate from the very beginning. It's interesting. And Jewish and non-Jewish teachers taught in the school. Non-Jewish teachers taught secular studies. And here, there's a description of what he wanted to do. He wanted to establish a rabbinical seminary. I don't think he was matzliach in doing that, but he wanted to do so. And his concept of rabbinical seminary, which has the following proposal: applicants would begin and apply to this seminary from the age of 15 to 18. You hear that? To a rabbinical seminary. Of course, prior to that, they would have to have proficiency in Talmud, in German, mathematics, history, geography, Tanakh, and those accepted into the program would follow an 8-year course of study that essentially covered all the Talmud, all Tanakh, Jewish philosophy, general philosophy, knowledge of languages, mathematics, logic, history, and geography. What do you say to that? I'm not going to read the entire proposal, which I actually went looking for. He was not the only Gadol who was very much, shall we say, in the forefront. Of course, you'll notice that these are Gadolim from which country? Germany. The next one, of course, Avshim is from Paul Hirsch, but we have someone here who's going to be reporting to me shortly on Torah Derech Eretz. I signed him the book by Rabbi Klubin last night. I told him he could read it in 2 nights. I gave him until Sunday. Only 400 pages. And but he will discuss with me the Torah Derech Eretz philosophy. And then the third person that I wanted to mention, besides Avshim Shavuot Hirsch, again, Avshim Shavuot Hirsch, I assume you all are familiar with, because he's a well-known personality. But the third personality that I also wanted to mention in this regard was someone who is probably not so well-known, but should be well-known to you. His name was Avril Hildesheimer. Avril Hildesheimer was essentially one of the great Gedolim also in Germany. And he had a similar kind of, shall we say, program to that which I mentioned earlier of Rav Shimshon Feld Hirsch and Rav Yaakov Ettlinger as well. I'm not going to go into all the details, but I'll just read the following comment, which is recorded for posterity. His schedule of lectures in a certain city in Germany. Each morning, Rav Azriel Hildesheimer lectured on Poskim from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. Did you hear that? 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. From 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., he lectured on tractate Gittin. From 10 a.m. to noon, he read German literature with his students. From 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., he lectured on tractate Kulin. From 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., he lectured again on Poskim. On the Sabbath, we prayed an early service and then studied tractate Shabbat from 8 a.m. till 3:30 p.m. Friday evenings during the winter season, he lectured on tractate Shavuot. He himself, Rav Hildesheimer, taught all the Jewish studies courses, but he also taught most of the secular study courses as well. He taught the following: German language, literature, Latin, mathematics, history, geography. His yeshiva became the second largest yeshiva in Hungary, with over 150 students, and many Gedolei Olam sent their children to study at Hildesheimer's yeshiva. You can imagine, you think he was not criticized? Trust me, he was criticized from the left and from the right. And so these are three German Gedolei Yisrael, and there's no question that their position was not necessarily accepted, shall we say, by other Gedolei Yisrael. Rav Baruch Ber, his tshuva in Kedushin, refers to this, and it's good to read that tshuva. But I also want to say something else, and I feel I must mention this, because this is one of the most famous letters of Rav Desla in Mifta Melio. In the third chelik of Mifta Melio, there is the following letter found on page 355 to 360, almost five pages. I Xerox the letter, and I want to read part of the letter, which is astounding, literally an astounding letter. He talks about the different approaches. There are three different approaches, if you will. One is Torah only. That's an approach of many Gedolei Yisrael. Second approach, the one I just described to you, German Gedolei, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, Rav Shimshon Feld Hirsch, Rav Hildesheimer, Torah Derech Eretz. Third approach, I'd rather not discuss that. You can figure that out, what that is. So he writes, Rav Desler, I just want to perhaps read part of it, not the whole thing. I have to translate it. He writes, the Rabbanim of the previous generation, including, he writes, my ancestors, who were the founders of the Muslim movement, Rav Yisrael Salanter, Rav Shimcha Zissel, addressed these issues. And he says, I heard that their views came close to those of Rav Shimshon Feld Hirsch, but they're outnumbered and opposed by the majority of East European rabbis. The majority of rabbis refuse to engage in any kind of secular study, lest they be ensnared by it. On the other hand, at every door, a minority of Gedolei Yisrael engage in secular studies, using it as a handmaiden to serve the course of Torah. That minority pursued its own path and was Mekadesh Shem Shamayim everywhere. And then he says, regarding Germany, I'm skipping. Some 200 years prior to Mendelssohn, great Gedolim, by and large, were no longer being produced there. Already then, the vast majority of Rabbanim in Germany and Western Europe were imported from Poland, Lithuania, and Russia. And certainly when the Talmidim of Mendelssohn began to spread their heretical teachings throughout Germany, there were very few Gedolim born and raised in Germany. At that time, all the Gedolim were natives of Lithuania, Poland, and other Eastern countries. And he writes, surely in those days, none of our ancestors engaged in secular studies. Nevertheless, they did not necessarily succeed in producing Gedolim and Torah. So he writes, who knows why one country produces Talmidei Chacham over several other Doros, then ceases to do so, another country produces them itself. He writes, after Mendelssohn, the only great Gedolim born in Germany were the Chassam Sefer, Rav Nachman Adler, the Rebbe Chassam Sefer, and he mentions actually a few others, Ralph Wolf Hamburger, and then there was Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, I mentioned our Hans Loner, he was learning in secular study. And he mentions a few other Gaonim, and then he says that this combination of Torah Derech Eretz, at the end of the day, after that period of time of a few German Gedolim, never succeeded in producing Gedolei Yisrael. Astounding statement. is the last 100 years in, let's say, those who follow this combined program of Torah Derech Eretz were not matzliach in producing Gdol Yisrael. On the other hand, says Rav Dessler, in the literature belt, they were zochet to find Gdol Yisrael, because on the contrary, he writes, the whole intention of the Ashkenazic world is Elef Niklasu Lemikra, 1,000 people enter to learn, but whom are they interested? In the one, Sheyata Lora. And that Gdol is going to come out. What about the rest of them? So he writes, many of them went off to Derech. In the German world, where they taught both Torah and Acheretz, they all remain observant. So he writes Rav Dessler. They all remain observant, all committed to Shmiras Torah Mitzvahs, but they weren't Gdol Yisrael. Astounding letter. One of the most famous letters of Rav Dessler that has created a lot of discussion. Okay, so what exactly am I trying to convey to you? There are different approaches, clearly. There's an approach of Torah De'acheretz, or some, in Yeshiva wrestling circles, they term it, at least some of them term it, Torah Mada. It's a term that Rav Soloveitchik never used, a term that I am not familiar with. I think Rabbi Lam was the one who really propagated that term, the use of that terminology. The Rambam, when he speaks about secular knowledge, the Rambam calls it Torah V'Chochmah. The Rambam, in a number of places, speaks of Chochmah, and that Chochmah, the Rambam, relates to, I would say, a number of areas. And I'm not going to go into this right now, because I see, as usual, I never realize what time it is. And maybe we'll just open up the floor first for a few questions before I go further. So this will have more, shall we say, action on your part. So feel free. Yes?
How can the Nesiv say that we're supposed to teach a profession when you're in Israel? And in Israel, we learned last week that from the Gemara, whatever the drush that we had, that the Torah you learn in Eretz Yisrael is doubled.
Which is, what does that Gemara mean, Exodus? That Rabbi Tzuriel quoted, that's what you're referring to. What is exactly the intent? The Gemara says a Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael is worth twice what a Talmud Chacham in Chutz Laretz is. I don't want to tell you what I heard once from my Rebbe. I've not heard one since. He's a sharp fellow, very, very sharp. And so the Gemara says that Rav Zeira fasted 40 Taniyos. When he made Aliyah and came to Eretz Yisrael, he fasted 40 Taniyos to forget the Torah of Babel. So the question is, why? Why would he do that? So the answer is, said Rav Nach Bornstein, Zatzal, he's an Altamira. He went to the Mir Yeshiva in Shanghai and was a great Talmud Chacham, Talmud the Brisker of Rav Elbel Soloveitchik, one of the going to Rav Akefet here. Number two or three, that's what he tells me. Number two or three, okay, I'm just quoting Rav Akevet, whatever the case is. He was certainly a great Talmud Chacham, no doubt about it. Rav Grell told me he was one of the biggest Talmud of Brisker of. I don't know, again, in terms of the lineup, which number he is. Lama Shamir. So he tells me, why did he fast? Because since inherently Taras Babel is better than Taras Eretz Yisrael, in order to appreciate Taras Eretz Yisrael, he had to fast in order to forget Taras Babel. That's a Shafa Lipisha, shall we say, kind of comment. I'm not sure what that Gemara means, the one that Rav Tzuriel quoted. I assume he was quoting it because he had a message to convey. We saw on Shabbos in Bnei Brak, Rav Tzuriel used to be the Mashkiach in Shalabim. He lives in Bnei Brak. He's written many, many svarim. He's someone who's really a very encyclopedic kind of person. He also, besides writing many svarim, he's also very into Rav Kook, very much so. And so he told us that he was speaking about the beauty of Eretz Yisrael and how one should, to the extent that one can, develop a love for Eretz Yisrael during the year that you're here, or a year and a half, or 2 years, whatever it may be, and then hopefully want to come back. That you can understand. He quoted the Gemara to that effect. I think in that vein, that's what the Gemara is saying. Maybe the connection to Kedusha, maybe the connection to Hashem Yisbarach, maybe along the lines of the Ramban, that the Hashkach of Hashem and Eretz Yisrael is different than Chutzaretz. That's how I understand those Gemaras. I don't necessarily assume that because, shall we say, one learns Torah and Eretz Yisrael, that the Torah here is inherently better than Torah Chutzaretz. There were many Gedolim of Chutzaretz whom we mentioned a few just now, were outstanding Talmidei Chachamim, even though they live in Germany and in Poland, Lithuania and in Russia, and including the United States of America. No shortage of great Talmidei Chachamim living over there. So I think the intention of that Gemara is more in line of the connection to Kedusha, Eretz Yisrael, and the like. Okay, other questions? Yeah?
Is there an acceptable approach to do, as the Rambam would say, the Chachmah more than the Torah?
What do you mean more than the Torah? In terms of the amount of time?
Yeah.
The Rambam himself is very clear, even though you'll ask how it's possible. But the Rambam himself writes, and I have actually quotations from the Rambam to that effect, the Rambam clearly writes that, and this is what I alluded to a moment ago, But the Rambam says, and I'll read you his language, which is written in one of his famous letters. And this I want to discuss also, but the Rambam says that, how does he view secular studies? He views them as rakochos, tabochos, va'ofos, handmaidens to the Torah. And the Rambam himself, I mentioned before, the ratio of 9 hours to 3 hours, that's clear that the Rambam held that Torah is keva, that is the preeminent subject that one should be involved in, and all these other secular subjects, which the Rambam was quite familiar with, as you know, occupy a secondary status for the Torah. That's clear from the Rambam. The Rambam says that his involvement in secular studies was primarily laharos ha'amim va'asorim es yofyo kitovas marehi, to show the beauty of the Torah. And often, there's a need, for example, when one studies Erevin, you'll discover pie in Erevin. I'm not referring to apple pie. So if you don't know anything about pie, basic mathematics, you will not be able to understand the Gemara in Erevin. And if you learn Kilayim, there's a need to have also knowledge of mathematics. If you learn Kinim, you still need mathematical knowledge. And there are many areas in the Torah that require secular knowledge. There's no question that secular knowledge can enhance one's ability to learn Torah, to understand it profoundly. And I'm talking about botany, for example. If you have some knowledge of botany, your knowledge of Zoraim will be enhanced considerably. And v'chula v'chula. But in terms of the amount of time, and also in terms of valuation, there's no question that the Rambam, all the Rishonim, clearly saw Torah as being preeminent, as being the focus of our attention, both in terms of time and in terms of how we place, shall we say, valuation on the Torah vis-a-vis other secular studies. Chazal say, Chochm b'goyim tamid. There is Chochm among the goyim. No question about it. Al zeh, mokum l'stamid. There's a bracha we make. When we see a great Chochm among the Chachm, Musa Olam, Baruch shechochlak mechochm asa l'basav adam. We make such a bracha. There is Chochm. But again, even that also has to be addressed. And maybe I will address that right now, since I think you're, maybe I don't know if you're alluding to it or not, but there's no doubt, for example, that a person wants to come close to Hashem is Baruch, there are two ways. That we see from Perek Tes and Tehillim, we say it every Shabbos morning. One is by studying Torah, and one is by examining the world. The Rambam writes, study our Torah. I studied Drosophila, the fruit fly, for 6 months. I came to, not exclusively, but one of the ways I came to Hashem Yisbarach was studying the fruit fly. I don't know if you're into the fruit fly. I can't imagine. But if you study the human anatomy, you study the eustachian canal of the ear, and you study the cornea of the eye, you are literally amazed by what the Ribbono Shel'Olam has wrought. The unbelievable complexity and majesty of the universe and all of its minutiae, just to study photosynthesis and how a tree is able to survive and how a tree is able to grow. That itself, right away you see the Shevach of Hashem Yisbarach. There's no way, and this is why the Chavos Al Babas, I don't have to go into all the Rishonim, all the proofs of the existence of God. I took an entire course for 1 year on proofs of the existence of God. I had nothing to do with myself. And so I took such a course. And at the end of the day, every proof can be essentially refuted. There is no proof that is really, how shall we say, iron proof, iron clad. It's not existent. But when one studies the universe, when you study science, unquestionably, the natural sciences and the like, physics and chemistry and botany and zoology and what have you, you can come to Hashem Yisbarach. However, it's clear from Perek Tes, all the Rishonim say, is that the ideal method? No. The ideal method is how? Through Limud HaTorah. Through studying the Torah, that's the ideal. That's where there's a transition in that Perek. It begins with HaShemayim Mesapim Kol Keil, but in the middle, what do we say? Torah Hashem Tvimam Shiras Nafesh. Ask all the Rishonim, Ma'in Shemitah Tzar Sinai. We're talking about seeing the grandeur of the universe through the examining the Bria. My father Hashem used to take us every Shabbos to two places. One Shabbos went to the Botanical Gardens, and the next Shabbos went to the Bronx Zoo. The zoo is still there. The Bronx is all Hashem. And some would contend that even, that borough is whatever it is. Anyway, the kids are, that was an eye-opening experience for us as young children, because we saw the Godless of Borough, the greatness of Hashem is Baruch. But the ideal is clearly through Torah. To come to Dveikus Hashem through Torah, that's the ideal. But there are two approaches. And they're both legitimate approaches. But one is ideal. That's how the Rishonim interpret that Perek in Tehillim and Perek in Tes, all the Rishonim. The Radak, and the Malbim, and Rav Yosef Kroh, and Rashi. If you look at all the Mefarshim and Perek in Tes, you will see that the transition is indicated. Anyway, so in terms of what am I permitted to study, what should I study? Obviously, studying the sciences is not a problem. The biggest problem comes in the area of humanities. That's where we encounter many, many issues. and the issues I think are, I imagine they should be fairly evident to you. There's one, maybe there's one good thing about your generation. You stop reading, so you don't read anything anyway. So it doesn't make a difference. You're never exposed to any of this. That's the irony of all things. But there is an issue in studying philosophy and humanities literature, especially the literature of today, where much of it, unfortunately, involves a lot of sexual innuendo, which has problematica from a halachic standpoint. Much of it involves nivul peh, which according to Rabban is also mishum kedoshim tiyu. So there are many, many issues involved in the study of literature and philosophy, even though there are those who obviously have defended that. But I would say Rav Gadol Yisrael had many difficulties with the above. Now you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
I was going to ask about literature.
Right. Again, those who are familiar with literature, I don't know, again, to what extent you are well-read in all the, whether you've read all Shakespeare, or all English literature, American literature, I don't know exactly where you're holding. I gather not too many people are holding anywhere. But whatever the case is, those who are, recognize the fact that there is definitely a lot of problematica in the study. There are ideas there that are inimical to Torah Shkafa. There's no question I'm talking about ideas, the heresy in terms of basic emunah, values, postulates in our emunah, and this has to be dealt with separately. It needs a lot of discussion, which, again, I don't think I'm going to do now. I just wanted to mention one or two things that I think are significant, since you asked the question a moment ago. Yeah, I was standing here.
Was Laura Spanier, for instance, there was an emphasis all in his generation in academia anyway. So
that's
correct. Was it a lechatchila for him, or is that, if you didn't do it, like Azai, so then it wouldn't have, so no, you know, people would have just not had.
I don't have expertise, I can't say I have that expertise. My understanding of it is that it was a chatzkila, no question about it. That, by the way, discussion of Baruch Be'er. In his essay, he contends that it's b'di'evet, no doubt about it. In the essay on Kedushin, there, in the end of Kedushin, that's my knowledge about Baruch Be'er. It's limited to one Baruch Be'er, Kedushin and Chalipin, maybe a second Baruch Be'er in Gittin. It's the only ones I understood in my life. And this essay of Baruch Be'er, I also was able to deal with Rabbi Reichman. The rest of Rabbi Reichman will have to teach me. But I'm just saying that I think for Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, perhaps Rabbi Steinman is right, partially because of the...
We need to set that schedule now, you know, the Marshall Fuse.
Okay, so I'm coming to that, and I think that's a very, very significant question, a very significant question in our door, because I grew up in a more liberal arts kind of environment, and you probably can gather that from my general tendencies and the like. Liberal arts means that basically, what courses did I take in college? The answer is everything and everything. Everything and anything. I took logic and epistemology and philosophy, and I was interested at one point in Ugaritic. I took a course in Aramaic because I thought it would help me with Unculus, with Targum Yerushalmi, and I took courses in mathematics, and I took courses in biochemistry and genetics. Why did I take a course in genetics? I wanted to figure out the Nekudim and Rudim, the Parashah and Chumash. So I was very interested. I wrote a paper on that, which is absolute balderdash. I still have the paper. Now, since then, actually, many books have been written, many stories have been written on the topic, on the genetic analysis of the Nekudim and Brudim. And I also took a course on spontaneous generation, because I was interested in the Gemara and Shabbos and Kuf Zayin, about the lice. I know many louses. Anyway, and the Gemara has a theory of spontaneous generation, which is of interest to me when I learned Shabbos, and so I decided to investigate that, and that's how I operated. But today, you don't do things like that. You have one goal. What is your goal? Then number one, and number two, perhaps even before, number one, is to make money, as many greenbacks as you can, as quickly as you can. And therefore, how does philosophy fit into that? Or Shakespeare is not going to help you. The Merchant of Venice, a pound of flesh, is not going to help you either. So why should I bother? But I think Rabbi Steinman's question actually is a very pointed question, a very significant question. I'm asking partially that clearly the atmosphere of the generation was pointed in that direction, but I still feel that Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger held it was a chatchila. It could really enhance. I think Rav Soloveitchik had a similar kind of position. I can't really, as mentioned the other day, I've been curious for many years, very curious, and I asked Rav Lichtenstein many times, why did the Rav go to Berlin? And number two, what did he do there? Number three, what did he gain from the experience? I asked this question to Lichtenstein. So he kept telling me, I don't know. I do not know. I cannot answer the question. He's a son-in-law about Soloveitchik. And I told the other day, I'll tell it over here again, because it's an unbelievable story. I told this about Rabbi Kefet, but he refused to publish it. I don't know why. I think I'm a pretty good source, but it's true, it's ABPA, so it's not direct. There's someone in my shul who has a shver, a father-in-law, very chash of a father-in-law, an older man. He's a man in his 80s. He lived in Eretz Yisrael, he's been living in Eretz Yisrael, I think, his whole life. Actually, he came from Europe originally. But anyway, he worked for Masada Chinuch, he worked for the Minister of Education over here. He taught, he was a teacher in the high school, and he taught actually the following article, called Dodi Dofek. Anyone ever read that piece by Rav Soloveitchik? I imagine you read it. You should have read it. If you haven't, we'll have to question some of your yichus. But anyway, so Kol Dodi Dofek, a classic piece. I'm just being a little bit dramatic. I don't want to get Rabbi Rachim too nervous. Anyway, so it happens to be an outstanding piece, a tremendous piece. So he taught this piece. And once in a while, the Mefakeach would come and visit the class to see how the teacher is doing. But they would stay 5 minutes and leave. One day the Mefakeach comes in, and the Mefakeach remains in his class for a good hour. He was sure he's going to be fired. We're looking for information to just get rid of him because he's teaching Kol Dodi Dofek. He doesn't understand what's happening. After class, Fakeach comes over to him and says, "You're probably wondering why I stayed here so long." He says, "I'll tell you. Because I was in Germany when Rav Soloveitchik was there." And he proceeds to tell the following story. I don't know if you ever heard this. Anyway, I heard this story from, his name is Rav Greenberg. He's a man in his 80s, B'yai Nara. After Big Tom Chokhov, I met him. He also gave me a sefer. He wrote on Tehillim. Nice, very nice little sefer. And he tells me the following story. He heard this from the Mefakeach. How do you translate Mefakeach? Supervisor. Supervisor tells him that when they used to go to the University of Berlin, people came there a year and a half before, but they had to take entrance exams. They just let them into the university. What entrance exams did they take? In mathematics, in science, in the disciplines that I mentioned earlier. So they all came a year and a half before, and they studied and studied and studied for the exams. A week before the exams were given, guess who appears in the scene? Joseph Baer Soloveitchik. They said, "What kind of a joker is he, this guy? He comes a week before the exams, everyone's here a year and a half. He's obviously a joker, clearly not a serious student." Fine, the exams are taken. The next day, they post all the marks. Who is number one? Joseph Baer Soloveitchik. A guy comes from Poland, does not speak a word of German, and he's number one on the exams. They said something is fishy in the state of Denmark. One of my favorite expressions. You probably have other expressions. They said they wanted to keep an eye on this guy. Obviously he cheated. Obviously he must be, he may ask crib sheets, manic notes, whatever he has over there. Then they discover he never goes to class. Everyone goes to class, and Joseph Baer Soloveitchik is never in class. What is going on with this guy? Tests are given. Number one, Joseph Baer Soloveitchik. He's never in class. Something is really fishy in the state of Denmark. They decided they're going to break into his room. See what he does all day. But they can't really break into his room. He came out, never leaves. He's always in his room. What's he doing there? They finally break into his room and he wasn't there. They broke the lock. That's how he describes. They break the lock in his door. They come into his room expecting to see crib sheets, manic notes, all kinds of, shall we say, devices to get good marks on the exam without studying anything. They see the following. There's an Aron of Svarim, an Aron. One Aron, he told me. It's Rabbi Greenberg. One Aron. It had in it the Shulchan Aruch, a Shas, a Rambam, of course, and one or two other Rishonim, and that was the extent of it. They then look around the room. They see an iron bed. That's how they described it to me. An iron bed, and on the table, they saw all kinds of writings. They proceed to examine the writings. Chidushei Torah. The entire table is full of Chidushei Torah. That's the story there. They are astounded. The Rav spoke German fluently. Fluently. He clearly had knowledge. No crib sheets, no manic notes. They came to one maskana. He must be a very bright fellow. That was the brilliant maskana that came to him. Okay, why am I telling you the story? My thesis is that Rav Soloveitchik went to Berlin because the Rambam says he wanted to acquire secular studies for two reasons. This is all speculation, pure speculation, no basis in reality or knowledge whatsoever. I have zero knowledge. I'm being open and honest. But over the years I've thought about it. One reason, because he knew he was going to eventually go to the United States. Somehow that was the plan. He realized he had to get out of Germany. Perhaps he saw the rise of Nazi Germany. Even had a prescience of what was going to happen. And decided not to come to the United States and be successful here. I have to, shall we say, broaden my horizons considerably. And this I'll be able to convey to the American Jewry, which at that time, you can imagine, you know what American Jewry was like in the early 1900s, late 1800s. It was assimilating as quickly as they came from Europe. That's how quickly they assimilated. This I know from my father, Zecheinu Livracha, from my Shrei, Zecheinu Livracha. Not to work on Shabbos was an impossibility. We think we're Meisei Nefesh. For Judaism, for Shabbos, for Kashrus, we don't have a clue what Meisei Nefesh is all about. I don't have a clue, maybe you do. I don't have a clue what Meisei Nefesh is all about. And so that's one reason why the Rav saw already been the, shall we say, the Koach Riyah Shalom, that he would need that kind of capacity in order to be able to relate to American Jewry and excite them about Yiddishkeit, about Judaism, about Yahadut, as you would say. But there's a second reason. And the second reason is, as the Rambam says, Ki Rakocha Yisvik Vabochas. That's how I see it. Because anyone who knew Rav Soloveitchik, and I think I knew him a little bit, maybe not as well as Rabbi Reichman, still not as well as his father, but even not as well as Rabbi Reichman, who has spent probably many years poring over Rav Soloveitchik's Kedusha Torah. The Rav, essentially and inherently, was a great Talmud Chacham, a gaon in learning. That was his essence. That was his mahus. Did I ever hear anything else from the Rav other than Shurim? Yes. I heard some lectures in philosophy that Rav Soloveitchik gave in the course of years, and it was quite impressive, to say the least, when he would quote, literally, by heart, not from the Tanya, that was like Aleph Beis, Likutei Torah of the Bala Tanya, passages that he quoted by heart, which was amazing to me. And at the same time also, he would refer to literature, philosophy, etc., etc. But it's clear that his major intent was to enhance his ability to communicate and to teach Torah more effectively. That's how I saw it. Those are the two, as far as I'm concerned, the two theses that I have with reference to this matter. I want to mention just a comment. Yes, yeah, you have more? Yeah. Feel free to speak. I hope I'm not totally a soporific. You know what a soporific is? I say that I'm better than a soporific. Because usually when I speak on Friday night in my shul, it's amazing. Usually a sleeping pill takes a few minutes to work. I work instantaneously. it's amazing how they go to sleep. Yeah, yeah, thank you.
Similar to what I was saying this question earlier, was the Rav's doing that, was that also like an inherent value, or because he came to America and he felt they needed it?
I think, again, the answer is both. I think it definitely had an inherent value for Rav Soloveitchik. He appreciated Chochma Bagoyim Tamin, but also saw it as a means to an end to really enhance his ability to teach Torah at a much more effective level. And to my mind, Rav Soloveitchik saved American Jewry. You may disagree, others may disagree. I mean, there were other great Gedolim also. Avraham Kotler was certainly Kotler and Kotler Munach. But I think in terms of the, shall we say, American Jewry that needed someone who could really present Judaism using their currency and using their intellectual, shall we say, concepts and constructs, the Rav, I think, was absolutely a colossus. I don't know anyone who was comparable to him. Now, I'm slightly biased, obviously, but even with my bias, I think I still have a certain objectivity in this matter. I just want to mention one comment, which I think is important. The Rambam says in Shulchan Aruch here, regarding this whole discussion about secular studies and the like, so the Rambam has the following comment. The Rambam says, I'm not going to read the whole thing. He tells you, Kol Yishu Yisrael Chayav L'Kvua Zman L'Talmud Torah B'Yom V'Laila Shenem V'Gis V'Yom V'Laila B'Shas Hatchak. Even if you read Kriya Shema in the morning and the night time, so the halacha is lo yavushu mipiv kavina day. But then the Rama says the following. I want to read this line. Ve'im la'adam lilo ki yimikra mishna gemara v'aposkim ha'mishokha ha'rayim. A person should spend all his time doing what? Studying Tanakh, Mishnayis, Gemara, and Poskim. U'bezeh yikna ha'olam hazeh v'olam habot. That's how we'll acquire this world and the next world. Avalo b'limud shara chachmos. He says explicitly, a person should not study other chachmos. But again, this doesn't contradict what we've been saying till now. The clear obligation is to study Torah minimally, a little by day, a little by night, maximally, b'gis b'yom b'layva, and during those hours in the presence, not any panos, you should study Torah, not shar chokhmah. So we stop here. We will legitimately conclude secular studies for the purpose of earning a living to everyone. Otherwise, they're for naught. But the Rambam continues. When we talk about muta lilma b'yakroi shar chokhmos, you're allowed to study secular studies beyond those needing to make a living, but b'akroi, on a temporary basis. That's the Rambam Shulchan Aruch. Since the previous line describes a course which is not obligatory, the phrase mutar probably means mutar l'chatchila. That's what I'm saying, that they're intrinsically worthwhile. There is value, but the Rambam only permits it on a temporary kind of basis. And again, the reasoning, I would imagine, would seem to be that, as I said, as I mentioned before, the Sifrei comments on Mishinanto Levanecha, Asein Ikar V'Altasim Tofel. Shelo Yehi Maso Matcho Elo Bahem. Shelo Ta'ari Bahem Dvarim Acherim. Shema Toma, that's the Gemara you mentioned, Shmuel, the Sifrei also. Lamati Chochmas Yisrael, Eilch V'Elma Chochmas Yuhumos, Tamaloma, Lo Leches Bahem, Lo Lipotim Yisochan. So the focus, the primary focus of my time should be devoted to the study of Torah. I want to mention, since the topic of this particular Shia was a Ben Torah, got the exact language that Rabbi Zinkin used, so may I mention a few things that I think are in order. A person who wants to excel in Talmud Torah, Mahavdil, the way one wants to excel in anything else, it requires enormous amounts of time that one has to devote to it. The study of Torah is not something that one acquires, shall we say, overnight. Rome was not built overnight, Mount Everest was not climbed overnight. The study of Torah requires many, many years and incredible devotion. But you should know that what you are doing now is a foundation for life. And if you are willing to devote yourself to it and get into it and become excited about Limud HaTorah, and you can become excited, you become passionate about it. If you ever saw Harav Soloveitchik say a shir, it was mind-boggling. He could say a shir, often when he used to learn Mishnayos for a yahrzeit of one of his relatives that passed away, he would start at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I remember at one point it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. By that time I had gone for breakfast, a few coffees of course, a Danish or two, lunch, was ready for my supper, he had moved from the spot. The Rav remained there from 9 to 4, and then someone actually told the Rav, it was in the winter, it's almost time for Mincha, one of these Ludniks who didn't really want to learn that more, and he decided that Mincha now is Sarah Soloveitchik. After he said it 3 or 4 times, the Rav then said the following statement, which I couldn't believe Rav Soloveitchik would say. He quoted the Gemara in Shabbos, Meisu Azna Mishmei Atera, Gam Filasa To'eva. On the spot, the Rav said that. I heard it myself. That was the end of that fellow. He has never been seen since. Anyway, but the when the Rav was involved in learning Torah, you could see it was his delight. It was, I don't know how to describe it. He was so focused on learning Torah that nothing could disturb him. Nothing, literally. And he can go on for hours and hours and hours and not notice anything. Completely oblivious to everything that was going on. And that came from a love of Torah that was profoundly enmeshed in his very warp and woof, his very essence, was really an essence of Dveikus and Hashem Yisbarach and Dveikus in Torah. When the Rav would speak about, he used to go on dates with the Shekhinah. Who else goes on a date with the Shekhinah? I used to say to myself, what in heaven's name is that gentleman talking about? A date with the Shekhinah. I usually have a date, not now, but before I got married, I have a date with young women. He has a date with the Shekhinah. And he said it without even a mashu of joking, even though the Rav had a good sense of humor, tremendous sense of humor to hold on to a crowd for 4 or 5 hours. I remember it sometimes at 12 o'clock, 12:30 at night in the Americana Hotel. The Rav would start his rush at 8 o'clock, and then he would say, he spoke in Yiddish, but then he would say, "Do you want more?" So of course my answer was, "No!" But I didn't open up my mouth. It was not possible. Everyone was quiet as well, 2,000 people. So the Rav said, "Shtika koridor, obviously you want more." And he would go on for another hour. There were times the Rav went to 1:30 in the morning. I was present in Americana Hotel. Mm-hmm. These unbelievable hushes. And it shows you the tzveikus the Rav had to Limud HaTorah. And Baruch Hashem, he was zochet to be mamid a lot of outstanding talmidim, including Rabbi Reichman's father, Shlita, and others, outstanding Rosh Yeshiva, and the outstanding Talmid Chachamim, who went on Baruch Hashem to become really a major Magid Hashir. So Rav Soloveitchik, I think, really represented a model which I think is a model, going back to Rabbi Stamen's original question, has the door changed today? Of course it has. It's a totally different door today. And maybe that kind of shiluv that perhaps Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger spoke about, which he saw, I think, as being certainly an ideal, lefi anias daiti, according to my humble opinion, perhaps is not as doable today, because the problem today is a very simple one. And I want to mention this also. I saw in Rav Kook, I decided to look into Rav Kook carefully on this topic, And I saw that the Tziv has a famous tshuva, Mishnah Dabra, as well, of a similar nature. And I think Rav Soloveitchik also speaks about this. Do you know Rav Soloveitchik's background, if you will? His background, initially, when he was a youngster, what happened? The way the story is told, again, I cannot attest to this, but this is what is, shall we say, out there. So he went to school in Chaslovich, which is White Russia, and there was a Chabad town, the Lubavitcher Shtot. The reason why it's a Lubavitcher Shtot is also a Masoret about that as well. So he went there, and guess what the Rebbe taught him instead of Gemara? Tanya. Chabad. Yosef, where are you? You can understand that. And apparently, as the story goes, at one point, we're supposed to be learning Bar Metzia. Usually they learn El Metzias. The Rebbe was learning Tanya. But, of course, the moment the supervisor came in, by the way, they put the Gemara over the Tanya, and proceeded to learn El Metzias. At one point, his mother tested him in Bar Metzia, and she sees that as a complete Amoritz, and he's spelling Tanya. That was the end of the Rebbe's formal education. And at that point, his father, Meshach Soloveitchik Zatzal, took him under his wings, and they began to learn together most of the day. I don't know exactly for how many years, not clear to me, but I asked Rav Lichtenstein about this also, a number of times, but it was a fair number of years. I remember once the Rav in Shir, we learned Hasaychas Umnin, and the Rav said that this parak he didn't learn with his father. And so we're going to have a lot of trouble with this parak. And trust me, we have a lot of trouble with that parak. He came to the sugya of Chamor, Chamor Zu, Chamor Stam. The Rav said Shir on it, you'll ask your father, Shlita, for, I would say, a month and a half. There were three maduras of that sugya that the Rav said over. And he said, the longest shirim I ever heard. How long is Perak HaSech Zomnin? How many blad is it? 8 9 blad? Call exactly how many blad is. So my Chabrus and I were learning the Sefer Machne Ephraim. We went to the whole Machne Ephraim during that period of time. We went out of our minds with those shirim. And the Rav said Shir on HaSech Zomnin. He was working it out. You should see the unbelievable hashkorat effort of Soloveitchik. His hasmada in trying to figure something out was unbelievable. All his keches were devoted to it. And he had plenty of keches. Physical and intellectual. No shortage. So, today it's very difficult. People have difficulty excelling in both. How do I excel in both? But I want to mention about cooking the Netziv. That's how we started. You know what they write? What is the ideal, Shmuel? Not to do it together. Rav Kook says clearly that is totally incorrect. One has to first establish a foundation in Torah. And that doesn't come, as I told you, overnight. It takes years. So first one should devote oneself to learning Torah, become anchored in Torah, and then, on top of that, one should acquire secular studies and the like. So, the Netziv says it explicitly as well. No question about it. To me, it's perfect. To me, it's aleph beis. After so many years of thinking about the matter, I've come to the conclusion that's the way to go. Is that doable? What's the answer? Unfortunately, probably not. But you know something? It's not completely true. It is doable. I know a number of people who actually came to us as well. I'm not suggesting that your parents do this, but it would be a bad idea. People stay here for a number of years, not just a year, not a year and a half, not two, but 4 and 5. It became clearly, shall we say, substantive and substantial, but they taught in a very serious way. And only then, they went on to different professions and the like. It's a totally different ballgame. Do you understand why? Why?
At the basis.
Not just that. Where are your values? Your values are Torah values. Not the values of the street and not the values of the Western world. Again, I'm not completely denigrating the values of the Western world. Just 99%. Maybe there's 1% that has some value. Maybe I'm looking for that 1%. I'm not sure where it is. But I've been looking for a while. When one is anchored in Torah, you have a totally different perspective on life. Totally. Your hashkafas are different. You're going to marry someone different. I'll tell you something else. Anyone who spends a year in Eretz Yisrael is going to marry one kind of person. You spend 2 years learning in Eretz Yisrael, you're going to marry a different type of girl. You understand what I'm saying? Why? For the same reason. You have different values, you're going to build a different type of home, you're going to be a different person. And that's what you should be striving for. To maximize your Torah knowledge and your commitment to Torah and your commitment to mitzvahs and your Yirat Shamayim. And there's a lot of Derech Eretz involved in Torah. Derech Eretz comes from the Torah. And Torah teaches us Hakaras HaTov, to thank our parents, thank our Rabbein, thank the yeshivas that we learn in, thank our Chaverim. That's what Torah teaches us. Without Torah, I'll just give an example, something that troubles me. I don't know, doesn't trouble anybody here, or most people doesn't trouble. My parents, Alei HaMashal, taught me when I eat something, Right afterwards, what do? I take my plate, I clean it up, I put it to the garbage. Very few people do that, not just here, in many yeshivas. Why not? So I asked someone in the yeshiva, thank God he's not here right now, it would be embarrassing. I asked him, why don't you clean up? I noticed that you never... He said, what do you mean? That guy over there, that's his job. What do you say to that?
No akarat hatov.
I'm sorry?
No akarat hatov.
No akarat hatov, lacking derech eretz. I have a personal axe to grind. But you don't agree with me. I understand your Dora. They don't agree with me. I spend my life going to Shurim. I went to Shurim for many, many years. I never missed a Shir of Asalavichik. But you know, I never missed a Shir of Nisan Alper either. I never missed a Shir of Anach Bornstein. I never missed a Shir of Rechum Gwelek. I was 2 years old. I did miss one Shir. So yes, did you miss any Shurim? Yes, I did miss one Shir. My wife broke her leg one summer. The Rav was saying Shir on Christmas. She broke her leg. And that was not very nice that she broke her leg. She decided to plant tomato in Providence, Rhode Island. They drive every day. She broke her leg. Okay, we went to the orthopedic surgeon. They put it in traction. She was with her leg up. I said, I'm going to the shiur now. My wife said, are you crazy? I said, crazy? To miss a shiur, that's all of Egypt? And my son is Croesus? What am I, nuts? How will I ever get that shiur again? So I debated myself what to do. I called my Rebbe, Rav Nissen Alperzer, Chazal Yom Yibracha. He asked me if I still have any semblance of normalcy. That's what he asked me. I said, I think I have a lot. I didn't go to the shiur. The next day, I collected 13 notebooks. Like the Gemara of Babasa, you give us a potato. 13 notebooks. I wanted to make sure I wouldn't lose even one iota, even a joke of Rav Soloveitchik. That's a Gemara. I feel a sichas chumash shel tavicham tzvicha limud, but I never missed a shiur. In high school, I'm a proud graduate of MTA. Where are you, Zach? That's a funny joke. The Ivy League. Okay, anyway, we're arguing which is the Ivy League of the high schools in New York City. He claims Haftar is, I claim MTA is, everyone, but they're alma mater. When you get an appreciation of a great God of HaTorah or a great Talmud Chacham, why would you miss a shiur? My father, Rishon, taught me that when a Rav would come and say a shiur, a shul that I was in, that we davened in, never could have missed a shiur. My father would hold on to me for dear life. Hold on to me is not the right word. I would be Mishal Shalom, Shal Barzal almost. But how could you not say this? I said, I don't understand a word. What's going on? What's the point? So that's the door I come from. What can I do? It's changed, I agree. A lot of things have changed. But I'm telling you, if you can connect to Torah, and you become passionate about Torah, it will become the most exciting thing in your life. It will direct your entire life. It will change your entire life. It will transform you, your entire family. And trust me, I'm telling you, just based on one thing, you're all smarter than I am, but I have one thing over you. It's called age. Age before beauty. And a little bit of experience in life. And if you become davuk in Torah and Hashem is barach, mm-hmm. I can tell you, you'll have Gan Eden, not only in this world, but Gan Eden next world as well. Okay, any other comments and questions? Yes?
You mentioned this Ramah that says you should learn only secular studies that are not pertinent to your profession. You should learn
Zachroy.
So what about in university when you learn things that are not pertinent to your profession on a regular basis?
The problem is when you go to university, and that you have to be careful about as well, because university you're exposed to an environment which is often very, very alien to everything Jewish. It's not easy to be in a secular university in that kind of a setting. And sometimes you have no choice but to take courses. People have asked me over the years, they have to take a course in comparative religion. To study the New Testament, to study the Apostles, to study Augustine, the City of God, and things of that sort. These are major challenges. What? Right? These are major challenges that people confront, and they're not simple challenges. So even a person, the Gemara says, Sanhedrin, that Lahavin Lahoris, I don't think people here are involved in Lahavin Lahoris, they're not involved in dissertations, they're not Pablo Bussiani, and the Ramban Lahavdil, you're not involved in these kind of theological disputations with the Catholic priests and the like. So one has to be extremely careful. You need a lot of guidance, a lot of caution, before you enter and spread these areas, which are, as I said, very perilous and very dangerous and menacing. And it's not simple. I don't think it's simple at all. I think you have to think very carefully what you're going to do and how you're going to be doing it. But as I said, a person who is armed with the study of Torah and continues to study Torah, the Gemara says in Saita, that's the best Haganah, the best defense is the offense of studying Torah, and that will hopefully protect you, but you have to be committed to it. And you also have to be anchored in it and suffused with it to the point where you absorb the values of Torah. And trust me, a year in Torah Shraga, or a year and a half in Torah Shraga, even 2 years in Torah Shraga, does not yet do the trick. You have to spend many, many years devoted to the study of Torah until you really develop a proper hashkafa, what's called a Weltschauung, a proper perspective and outlook and proper values. But hopefully you're on the way, Mitzvah Hashem, and Hashem should give you all Seata D'Shemayah, you should be able to do it and continue to grow. Yeah?
The Rosh Hashiva mentioned earlier in his speech that give two sons, and one of them is the more intelligent son, and the other one is a run-of-the-mill son, then more
that's
intelligent.
That's one of the positions that's mentioned to resolve the discrepancy between the two Gemaras that I began with.
Right. So the more intelligent son should stay and learn all day. And the run-of-the-mill son should earn a craft as well, right?
That's what
we're saying. Does the more intelligent son have maybe an obligation to specialize in a craft, from leading innovator or doctor, something like that?
I want to tell you the following story. This story is probably apocryphal, but it's a gewaltige story. I heard from a doctor. I've told the story over many times. That doctor happens to be someone that I know because I sat behind him in Maria. I went to Maria Shurim for 13 years. That's a shul in Manhattan, also let you say Shurim in Yiddish once a week. I never missed a shiur for 13 years. Yeah, I had one problem. 1 year. I got married the night of the shiur. So I was debating.
Still went.
To my mazel, the shiur was canceled that week. The hashkocha, the Rebbe Shalom had Rachman and stuff. Anyway, so a doctor there went into medicine and asked three Gedolei Yisrael, what area of medicine should I enter? He asked Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. Rav Moshe told him, enter the area of medicine, we will have minimal Chil Shabbos. This is classic Rav Moshe, anyone who knew and knows Rav Moshe, the profession. And usually what Rav Moshe even told him, he asked, well, what profession, which specific area of medicine shall I enter? Radiology. Because radiology then was a neat profession to go into, no involvement with Shabbos whatsoever. It was ideal. And then he became radiologist. So a number of very well-known radiologists from 40, 50 years ago, there's a fellow named Dr. Melvin Zalewski. I don't know if you know him. Anyone know him? He was actually, in my days, he was the doctor in, there was a camp called Highline. Highline, I was in that camp for one summer. Mamish Nisa Nisa, what I was doing there, but that's a different story. But anyway, the kids, I was there, I was on the educational staff. Okay, since I mentioned the name of the camp, I won't say anything more. Anyway, but the kids, that's what Moshe told him. Then he went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, said, Chazal Debracha, Olav HaShalom. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe told him that you should enter an area of medicine where you will, through your medical practice, you'll enhance the self-esteem of human beings. So he was taken aback. He asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe what he meant. He told him, enter the area dermatology. He told him, become a dermatologist. Why? People with skin problems often have self-esteem issues. You can understand that. And try to be mechazik, the self-esteem of people. That's what the Lubavitcher Rebbe told him. He went to Rav Soloveitchik. The Rav told him the following. Enter an area of medicine where you'll push the frontiers of medicine forward. You'll innovate. You'll discover new challenges. You'll become creative. And you'll discover drugs. And the Rav even told him, this is what he told me. I don't know how many years ago. This is probably close to 55 years ago. And the Rav told him, you'll discover cures for different ailments, including cancer, the Rav mentioned at that time. And these three Gedolim, you see that the three responses so reflect each of these three Gedolim. Yeah. So I understand what you're saying in terms of the intelligent fellow going into something innovative. But the presentation of the resolution of the two Gemaras was, I don't think necessarily, as I said, embedded in concrete. That the son who is, you know, it reminds me of, we had Haggadah, my father, Sean, we used to, of course, on the night of the Seder, we read the Haggadah. So there's a translation, I think it's the Maxwell House Haggadah, but it's an old Maxwell House Haggadah. I have it in my house. So they translate, Chochem Mahu Omer, what does the doctor say? I'm not joking. What does the doctor say? My son, the doctor. Every Jewish mother wants her son to be a doctor here. Who wish Jewish mothers here want their sons to be doctors? No? One, two. Okay. And it said, Tam Mahu Omer. This is not the Maxwell Hasagada, another Agada. What does Simple Simon say? I'm not joking. I have such agadas. I have a collection of about 150 agadas. It's not really mine. My father saw me really collected agadas. And so we still look into these agadas. I think the answer was not embedded in the Greek. So obviously there's room even for the sharp-witted son to also innovate and to also enter.
Or case by case.
Yeah, okay, that, I believe ultimately that's the way it has to be resolved. You can have someone, listen, all of us have a chelik in Torah. It's very important to remember. Torah is not just for Iluyim. That's a big mistake. I don't know if I should say over this because maybe Avak Lashon Hara, I don't know if I'm allowed to. I was in a shiur of an Adam Gobel. I won't mention who it was. And this Adam Gobel made a statement to the effect that the ideal Torah student is someone who has intellectual acuity and the ability to be sharp by nature, he has sharp reflexes intellectually and the like. And those who don't necessarily have it, not they should learn Torah, chas v'shalom, but perhaps they should, similar to what I just mentioned over here. So I heard that from this Adam Gobel. I quickly ran to Avraham Soloveitchik. I told him what this Adam Gobel said. I had a keshu with Avraham Soloveitchik. He was a very young man. I was in high school. And I used to go to his shiur once a week, which a lot of it was published, a lot of it, very little of it was published in Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind. It meant nothing. They published nothing about Avraham Soloveitchik. But now it's available on a, he told me, what's the name, Rabbi Yosef. I heard from Rabbi Soloveitchik also. They have a, yes, so they published that, well, they published all the shiur, thousands and thousands of shiur are available. I told Avraham Soloveitchik, he said to me, who told this to you? I said, X. He said, come with me right now. I went with him. We went to X. I was very embarrassed. I was a very young man. He went to X, and thereupon, Avraham Soloveitchik proceeded to discuss this issue with him in my presence for almost 3.5 hours. I'm not exaggerating. Avraham Soloveitchik contested this whole thesis and was so passionate about it, I never saw anything like it in my entire life. Left an unbelievable impression on me. Every Jew has a chelek in Torah. And as I said earlier, much earlier, that one can be zochet to siyata d'shmaya as well. We believe that the Jew is involved in Amala Shel Torah, the Gemara says in Megillah, or the favorite Masechtas in Yeshiva. The Gemara says that a person who's yogea b'Torah will be matzliach. I believe that, I've seen it over the years. I know many Magidei Shir who are average people, but they're outstanding Talmidei Chachamim because they essentially are driven and expend an enormous amount of energy, and that's why they were matzliach, they are siyata d'shmaya. I also know Magidei Shir who are big Iluyim. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Okay, I think at this point, I guess, yes.
We have to
leave. That's Chava. Okay, I thank you, Rabbi Zinkin, by the way, and thank you all for coming. It's really a pleasure to have the chance to talk to you.